So that's Jim Houston. There's Jim Houston.
Little Tomatoes. I love them.
Yeah, see?
Well, who asked you?
Little ones, and you know what? I never would have thought this, but do a salmon sometime, and in a sea of those little baby tomatoes, fantastic.
A salmon in the sea. What a thought.
Yes.
In a sea.
So I'm going with the little ones. Besides, then you can have a pocket full of them. I love just eating them.
Well, you're not getting any of them. Well, you know, we're gonna grow tomatoes in the dome.
You know, that's the one thing I'm always concerned about, a pocket full of tomatoes.
Oh, this is hardly related story, but I can connect just about anything. I was in my erstwhile coaching career when my kids were playing all sorts of sports and I was coaching a baseball team. And it was the first year that kids actually hit, you know, the pitching machines are gone. I think they were 9 years old.
Right.
And so it was the first year that they'd had uniforms. And a typical, you know, what the uniforms are like for the guys, you know, the pants aren't really long and there's one pocket and it's in the back. And this one little guy, Jeffrey, kept running off the field. And every time he ran off the field, I noticed that his pants were on backwards. And so I finally, about the third or fourth inning of the game, if there were that many, anyway, I approached him at one point and said, Jeffrey, why are you wearing your pants backwards? He looked at me very matter-of-factly and said, Jim, because it's a heck of a lot easier to reach the sunflower seeds when they're in front.
It's brilliant.
That's excellent.
So why
brilliant.
Would you turn them around? Now, it could be tomatoes.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what I was waiting for. I was waiting for the relevance to tomatoes, but I'm not sure I found it. But
no,
it's all right.
I understand. I understand.
Should we get on to hockey?
Hey, what about Dustin Byfuglien?
What?
Good for them. Good for him.
New contract.
Yeah, little bigger than I thought it would be, but he took a little shorter term. I think everybody was a little worried there that that they were going to have to go 7 or 8, and I'm sure the Jets didn't want to do that. So they give him a little extra money, got him for 5. He's a real interesting guy. I think he's truly settled down since his early days in Chicago. He's a little more predictable player, but he can still play a ton of minutes, and as long as he keeps himself in relatively good condition over the next few years, he's a real asset.
There were a lot of people thought he was going to wind up leaving. Did you?
I wasn't sure. I just looked at what they were doing there and thought one of the guys is going. And maybe both he and Andrew Ladd can stay. I'm not sure that it makes sense with all of the money that they've got to give to restricted free agents that are coming up. But I looked at that and thought, well, they'll go at it and they'll see which one they're most likely to get. And, you know, and I guess probably it makes a little more sense in the position that he plays that you would go after him. But I wasn't really sure. But since he's from that area and he's not, you know, he's from the upstate Minnesota, mm-hmm. It's not a bad place to be. And he seems to quite like it. So good for them. Good for him.
You know, you talked about length of contract. He will be 36 when it expires.
Right.
But and he plays
most of the guys that are getting hometown deals are getting 8.
But he plays a heavy game, Jim.
Yeah.
A really heavy game.
But it doesn't seem to hurt him.
No, I'm just thinking 3 years from now, will it hurt him?
You were never going to get him to stay there for 3 years, John.
No, I know. That's
so
right.
I think they did well to get 5.
So it makes you wonder, I mean, and I know they wanted him. So I'm like you, though. I think now that it'll be difficult to keep Andrew Ladd there.
Well, let me be naive here.
Okay.
Did he take a hometown discount?
Not in terms of dollars, but I mean, he didn't take as long a deal as he might have been able to get.
He got 4 years at $8 million a year and then the fifth year at $6 million a year.
Right. And so if he'd gone to the open market, he's getting 7 years.
7-year deal, yeah.
That which would have been the longest that he could get. The longest that Winnipeg could give him was 8.
Was 8, yeah.
And you knew that they didn't want to go that far. So they pay a little more. I don't think there's any hometown discount, Bob. I think he got really good dollars, but they got what they wanted, which was the shorter term.
Yeah, understood. Generally, you assume that there's some kind of hometown discount, and I looked at that dollar cents figure, and I've watched him play, and he's a very good, nice player. But I didn't know that he was going to get $8 million from anybody, and you've just said you didn't think he would. So there's a, you know, not much of a hometown discount there. In fact, the only thing he gave up was as you said, was term.
Right. So, and, you know, he's going to be a very wealthy man at the end of it and for the rest of his life and his family's life.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
That's just the way of the world now, boy. You can find deficiencies in just about any player, but you can't find a player that's even close to as good as the one you've got when he's somebody like Byfuglien. So you got to suck it up and sign him because, you know, you let him go and then you're starting over again. It's too many more things to do, and so you got to find a way, and you hope that the cap goes up in the next few years, and you've got a little more room for some of the guys that are coming up.
Two wins in a row for the Montreal Canadiens. Oh. Is it over? Is the thing over?
Boy, not if you watched them yesterday. You don't think that it is. When you watch them play on Saturday against Edmonton, they look pretty good, and that's the best that I've seen them look since New Year's Day when they played in Boston, and I thought maybe they'd turn the corner then, and they turned the corner and ran right into a wall. Went back to the same way they were playing. Then yesterday, I thought there were long stretches of the game against Carolina, which is, you know, people think that that should be a pushover. They're not right now. They're playing pretty well. And there were long periods of time yesterday where Carolina was the better team. Ben Scrivens played a pretty good game, and they ended up winning it in a shootout. And I guess you never know how a team can build off of that. They got the win, so you don't start critiquing the wins. You think about what they can do next. We'll see tomorrow night when they play a really good team that's rolling from Tampa if they've made any measurable gains here. But the measurable gains for me are the 4 points that they needed so desperately, but I didn't think yesterday they were terrific.
No, I agree. I mean, let's face it, Carolina has more points than Montreal does on the season. So it's not as if it was a cakewalk.
I know,
if
but it's
wins.
Perception, isn't it?
Yeah, I know. It's
wow, they're Carolina. That's an easy one.
Yeah. So at what point does Marc Bergevin decide to become a traitor and decide to improve his team, or does he have to wait for Carey Price to come back?
I think he's got to wait for Carey to come back. And, you know, based on our daily look at the way he's practiced, things were looking a little promising in the last few days, far more promising than they looked a week ago. If he can just get his team through this period of time where they don't have to win every game, but they can't lose every game, if they can do what they did on the weekend and win 2 of 3 and you know, stay with the pack here until Carey comes back, then I'm not sure that he has to do an awful lot, because I'd be afraid to do too much at this point, because you're missing the best player in the world. And he not only... does it change what goes on in your goal? And I'm not suggesting the guys there have been bad, but it changes the way everybody plays. It's just a matter of fact that team will be a lot better in a lot of different ways, some of them intangible, some of them very tangible, with Carey Price in goal. Now, he's probably got a ways to go to get back up to speed when he gets back, and that's... you know, that could give them some problems too, but I'm not so sure that he's going to do an awful lot. He certainly hasn't given us any indication that he's doing very much at all before the trading deadline. Maybe a little housekeeping, but I don't expect a big bombshell.
Generally speaking, trades made at the trade deadline, and I'm saying generally speaking, are, you know, our third liner for your third liner, and I don't think they add up to a whole bunch of much.
Housekeeping stuff.
Yeah, it's just, I don't want to... I don't want to disrespect anybody, but I always say it's junk for junk. You know, it's interchangeable parts for other interchangeable parts, and sometimes they work and sometimes they don't, but I'm not sure that those deals really have very much to do with it. Having said that.
It's to help the TV shows.
Yeah, well, that's what it does.
Yeah.
If you're Bergevin, what is your number one priority? Is it a goal scorer?
He could use a little help on the wings. Well, they could use a center, but I'll tell you what, the center ice position, this is a different topic, but it's true. The center ice position in the NHL is a black hole that's a pox on every team. There just aren't enough center icemen. And nobody, some teams have two, not many teams have three, and name me somebody who's got four, and they're probably the best team in the league. So he could use a center iceman, but that's dreaming to pick up somebody who can...
Not happening, really. Yeah,
he's not going to pick up anybody who makes an appreciable difference or bumps anybody back, unless in the case of, say, Carolina, they decide they cannot sign Eric Staal and they have to make a deal. Those ones are the ones you're talking about that don't happen very often at the trade deadline.
Right.
But there's a possibility of one like that, or a Stamkos. There's a possibility of a couple of big ones. One of them came off the table today in Byfuglien, and that's usually the case, that the big deals will come off the table. So then he's in a position where he's, you know, doing some cosmetic deals, and he might be able to upgrade a little bit. You know, he might be able to get a little more scoring and upgrade a winger by bringing in Radim Verbata, for example. But those are the kind of deals that you were just talking about, Bob, that are made all the time at the deadline. They're a little bit of an upgrade, or my third liner for your third liner,
yeah,
or a little bit of insurance at a depth position going into the playoffs so you got an extra guy around.
Yeah, but if you're going to change the fortunes of the Montreal Canadiens, and again, I don't know how, as John said earlier and you agreed, without Carey Price there, I don't know whether what you know. I don't know what Bergevin thinks he's looking at. Everything could change completely.
You are when he's in goal, and you know you're a heck of a lot better when he's playing.
Well, yeah.
So you don't want to tear the thing apart and toss away. You know, you don't want to make a decision that you're going to regret later, just because you know your team doesn't quite play with the confidence, and some of the players don't play with the confidence that they normally would if you had one of the best players, or maybe the best player in the world, in your lineup. Yeah. So I'm also of the belief, you know, Bob Gainey used to do all of his dealing in the summer and never did anything during the season because he thought 82 games was a time to put your team together. And unless you had, you know, extraneous developments like injury, you left your team together to grow. And I find that more often than not, that is the best way, that it sometimes deals, and an abundance of deals, especially at the deadline, can be disruptive to your lineup, because there are guys who aren't going to play if new guys are coming in and you're down to the last, you know, 30 games of the season and less, and you pretty much know where your team is. There aren't many moves you're going to make at the deadline that are going to make your team appreciably better, maybe a little bit better. Maybe they help you in the long run because you get some depth in the playoffs, but if you're no good now, you're not likely to trade yourself into being good by the 29th of February.
Yeah, you Jim, on Saturday you did Calgary-Vancouver.
No, I did Toronto-Ottawa. I wish it was Calgary-Vancouver. It was closer.
Well, you live in Vancouver. How's that?
Yeah.
Tell you how closely.
But he doesn't live in Calgary.
Tells you how closely I watched on Saturday. What are the Canucks doing? Where do you think they are now? They've really made an aggressive play to go younger and faster. Another veteran put on waivers and sent to Utica. Where do you think Jim Benning is in trying to go?
I think that they say all the right things about retooling on the fly and wanting to continue to contend for a playoff spot while at the same time building for the future. But I think the reality is they are building for the future, and with the exception of a couple of guys, they're a pretty young team now. And I think that as a fan out here, I would embrace it because I see, yeah, it was time. They've had a pretty good run here of about 15 years where this has been an excellent team. The Sedins are still really good players and have two or three years yet. I mean, they're still top 15 scoring 15 years into the league at 35. So I don't see those guys, I don't see them falling off the cliff tomorrow. But around them, all sorts of young players. And now the next move will be Radim Verbata is probably going to go because he's an unrestricted free agent. They have to make a decision on Dan Hamhuis, who's a pretty good player and a real good citizen. But they can get something for him. The problem with all of these deals, too, though, is that you still got to have a team. You know, you can't just trade everybody. You got to put a team on the ice, and so they might have to keep Hamhuis around. But I see them I don't see this as a sort of a halfway team still able to compete for the playoffs, although because of their division, they are still mathematically there. I see this as the rebuild is on in full, and the young players are going to play, and they've now parked over $7 million in salaries in Utica, and that says a lot.
Jimmy, we're out of time. We got to go. We thank you as always. Enjoy the rest of your day, and we'll talk soon.
Go with the cherry and the smaller tomatoes.
No. Jim Houston.